Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And
that's
why I taught myself how to draw was actually The Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, The Road to Creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And back in 2016, I decided I was going to take the plunge after going through quite a bit of training in the VoiceOver St. Louis class over Clayton Studios. I decided that in lieu of doing any sort of commercials, I was going to take the plunge and narrate my own book for my publisher at the time. And after reading the first chapter, she gave me the green light to narrate the rest of it. And the rest is history. I had such a great time with it that I decided I wanted to do more audiobook narrating. And so I recruited a lot of fellow authors to see if they had something that they would like me to go ahead and narrate for them. I was able to build up a small portfolio and then eventually started charging. And since then, I have now more than 20 books into my journey. And one of the things that I truly love to talk about on this podcast is the wonderful world of audiobook narrating. So whenever I encounter someone who is on the same path as I am, then I definitely want to have them on so that way they can share their story. And Eric Priestman is definitely no exception here. The man has been doing audiobooks for quite a few years now. He is approaching 60 audiobooks narrated and with a very wide range of genres, both fiction and nonfiction. He has done science fiction, he's done horror, he's done thrillers, and he's actually just recently recorded the newly released prequel to the film Fright Night. So now he's in the world of movie tie-ins, and I am really excited to not only go into his history, but also just to see what he has learned along the way. This will definitely be a very exciting episode for me as well as for all of you. So it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Eric Priestman. Eric, how are you, sir?
Hello, everybody. I'm doing good, George. I'm good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And thank you very much for reaching out as well. This has been a pleasure to meet different audiobook narrators to see how their journey began and where it's led them, what they've learned along the way. Very exciting times.
It's always good to hear different perspectives and see how other people got to where they're at and compare it to where you're at.
Exactly. This day and age, audiobooks seem to be more popular than ever. Between audiobooks and podcasts, audio really is the way to go right now when it comes to books, other forms of entertainment.
Everybody's walking around with earbuds.
Yeah, we're all in our own little world. It's kind of like how they intended social media to be, which was one big stage that is going to have millions of people dominating that stage, when in fact, all it did was just create millions and millions of tiny little stages with room for only one person on each one. So
when you're listening to a book, it's you and me, nobody else.
Exactly. And that creates a much more intimate setting, doesn't it?
Indeed. And you record one audiobook that's going to get listened to by lots and lots of different people, and they're all going to have their own perspectives and takeaways from it. You do the best you can and hope that it reaches the most people that it can reach in a good way.
Tell us a little bit about the Fright Night prequel. I think that's always terrific, having just dipped my toe into that wonderful world of movie tie-ins myself.
Yeah, so this is my first of that genre, movie tie-in. This is from an author named Michael Harbron. He's written a series of books, Interview with the Devil, that take place and talk about exactly what the title sounds like. He writes in the horror genre, nothing gory or anything like that, just horror thriller type things. About a year ago, I was recording a book for him, and he reached out and said, hey, so I'm writing the book to Fright Night, the prequel to Fright Night. The prequel is called Fright Night Hellbound. So you can find that on Spotify and iTunes and Audible for your audiobooks. And he's writing it, and he goes, I'd hope to have you read it. And of course, granted, this is all via text and email, so there's no real emotion shining through, but inside I'm like, you hope, yes, please let me, let me narrate a book that's a movie tie-in. Let me please break that ice. The book was done a couple months ago, and he reached out and he said, I'm hoping to have you do it. I'm talking to the publishers. They may want to have an actor record it, which is very common these days and stuff like that. And I'm like, please no. And so I got in touch with him to start on the next book in the series of The Interview with the Devil. And he's like, can we go ahead and do Fright Night? And I'm like, you betcha. Cleared my schedule from the other book and did his. And like I said, the physical book came out end of October in time for Halloween, and the audiobook came out staggered iTunes one on one day and Audible a different day because of industry reasons. I don't know what the reasons are, but it should be out on all your regular platforms now. And so this book actually does take place before the movie happens, but it ends with them going to the town where the movie Fright Night takes place. Ends right before the movie starts.
And this also got the blessing of Tom Holland as well, correct?
It did. He's got a foreword in it, and his name is attached to the book as well. That's another good thing.
Oh, that's great. So, that is so cool. And are there going to be more Fright Night books?
I have no idea. I don't know anything about that at all. If this is going to open the door for Michael to write more, or if there's room for more, because we all know how the movie ends. No spoilers. But yeah, I don't know. You could, in theory, keep going backwards. And in the book Fright Night Hellbound, it does touch on Jerry's origins and his past, his ancient past and stuff like that. So there is definitely room for that.
I'm shocked that they actually didn't get William Ragsdale himself to see about narrating it.
Like I said, I'm glad the author and the publisher decided on me. So
that's terrific. Yeah.
I'm grateful and thankful.
Definitely, based on what I'm hearing from your voice, you would be a slam dunk for that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
One of the things I love to hear about on the show is what I like to call the road to creativity, because everyone's on one particular path, and then all of a sudden they meet someone or experience something, hear something, and decide, ooh, I want to do that. And all of a sudden they find the nearest exit ramp. They're on a whole other highway, and they're going in a different direction. And hopefully they're able to merge in traffic without getting wiped out. But what was it that got you on this wonderful course in the first place?
Sure. I'm a 21-year retiree from the California Highway Patrol. I live in Los Angeles. And I was working in the office for the last 5 or 6 years of my career. And over the course of those few years, I was the person you'd walk into the office to get a ticket signed off or to get your car out of impound or to ask questions or whatever. So over the course of those few years, I'd have random people at random times. I'd start talking to them and, hey, you've got a great voice for radio, or have you ever thought about doing commercials? I got a handful of those over the course of the years. Audiobooks had barely cracked the surface, but the more I heard about it, I'm like, okay. So about a year before I retired, I literally typed into Google, how do you become an audiobook narrator? And I found a link to ACX with a video that showed how to build your studio and stuff like that. And that was my impetus. I went from that and I've got a laptop I can use. And at the time we lived in a house, 2-story house that had the room under the stairs that a lot of them make for storage, which was perfect. It was literally like this big. It was perfect for me to sit in and insulate, and it was quiet. Made a little studio out of that and started on ACX. That's started my career on ACX, and that's where it's been going from there since.
Talk about mirroring what I've been going through, because that was actually literally my first studio in our previous house. We had the area that was under the stairs leading down to the basement. And my father-in-law actually worked really hard on this room. He bumped it out a little bit more to give me some extra space, but I was able to line it wall to wall with acoustic foam.
Yep.
And it was a solid space for quite a few of my books. Once we made the move over to this other house, that was when I was given the green light to claim a room upstairs as my office. And sure enough, I walked into this one particular bedroom and looked in that walk-in closet, and it was big enough that I just said, this is it.
Yep.
This is going to be my studio. This has wall-to-wall with the same acoustic foam that I had before. And I was able to decorate it to my needs and my wants. And so now it's something that I enjoy sitting in here. And so it's not only become my haven for all the audiobook narrating that I've done since then, but it's also become my podcast studio.
It's our safe space.
It's our safe harbor. Yeah, it really is. And it just feels good being in here.
Where I'm at now, we remodeled this house, and this was a regular sliding door closet. And we bumped it out and put a real door on it. And so this is a 4x5 or 3x4, 9-foot-tall closet that's purpose built for this. The walls in here are insulated, as opposed they wouldn't be in a real closet, just to add another layer of silence. I've got a guest bedroom out there that no one's in, and a bathroom that no one uses on this side. So I'm well insulated from most of the rest of the house.
Perfect. That's a great setup there. Yeah. And so you went through ACX, you followed the instructions, you got everything all set up. And then did you start auditioning right then and there?
Probably within a couple of months of pulling the trigger and buying the gear and setting up my recording space, I started auditioning. I am aware that I'm one of the outliers, one of the fortunate ones. I got a PFH gig out of my first probably 5 to 10 auditions. And it wasn't a lot. I think it was $75 PFH, something like that. But my first book was a book on astrophotography, how to take pictures of planets and stars and stuff like that. So that was my first paying book. It was even before I got a royalty share. I am aware that that's rare, but by no means did I say it's all been PFH since then. No, I have well done my share of royalty shares and, you know, they make some money. But so, yeah, I have been 85%, 80% ACX, but I found a few authors, or I should say a few authors have reached out and found me via my website or whatever and have reached out. I've gotten some from Upwork, but by far, most of my stuff has been through ACX.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. And when you say Upwork, that is kind of like Fiverr, right?
No, Fiverr is you put yourself out there. Hi, this is me. This is what I'll do for you. And a perspective, regardless of what your field is, narration, signage, whatever, you put yourself out there and the buyers come looking for you and they pick you. Upwork is still, they put auditions. Hey, I'm looking for somebody to do this. I'm looking for somebody to do that. And you audition for them.
Gotcha.
So Fiverr, to my knowledge, Fiverr is really the only one that has that reverse model. Everything else, at least for the audiobooks and for voiceover, is still we're going looking for auditions to put out.
So once you had that first book finished, what was that feeling like once you got to actually see the graphic? Because the graphic normally has a square graphic, a version of the cover, and then it's got read by and your name on there. Or narrated by.
I honestly don't know that I ever really had that moment. Yeah, you're saying those words and I'm trying to think. And I think knowing my personality, I think I just went, okay. Now, conversely, seeing my name on things like Fright Night, Hellbound, that's a different thing. You know what? So that's, I think for my career personally, the more I get into it, the more that starts to mean something versus at the beginning.
Once you got that one done, was there a specific genre that you felt you could excel in?
I belong, as most narrators do, to various online groups. And I find this is something I said in the beginning, and I still realize you don't necessarily get to pick what the industry likes you for. Oh, I'm going to do this. And the industry will go, no, you're better for that. I would love to do science fiction more just because, hello, look at my studio. I would love to do that more. But I find if you look at my, and I could be getting this wrong right now, if you look at my resume, I've done a fair amount of horror, dramatic thriller and stuff like that. So I haven't done any children's books or things like that. So I just enjoy, I guess, the mainstream things that I can use this voice on, that I don't have to go really far off the path. Yeah. I don't think I'm good at that, at least not yet. Maybe I can do some accents and I can do a couple of accents, I think, pretty well. And I've done a few books, entire books in a British accent. I don't think anybody from London is going to mistake me for a Londoner, but to the casual reader, it passes muster. Is there a genre that you like? There's genres I like, but they're not necessarily the ones that I find myself doing a lot. Again, the industry says, no, your voice is better for that instead.
I remember my teacher telling me something similar when originally we were going to set me up to record commercials. Hmm. And he said, no, you fit really well in the internal communications sort of thing.
So, exactly, like, the point.
And funny enough, that's something that I wound up doing a lot of when I was working at my full-time job that I had after I finished those lessons. They just happened to ask me and just like, we understand you took some voiceover lessons. I was like, yeah, I did. Can you see how you would do with this PowerPoint presentation? And I did it and they really liked it. And they gave me a nice little gift card as a thank you and everything. And then all of a sudden, I think I did like another 10 or something, even though there wasn't much extra that I was bringing in as a result of doing it. It was a nice little pat on the back at least, and a good way to build experience.
Yeah. As a former state employee, I have sat through my fair share of PowerPoint presentations for various training things. My problem is if I audition for things like that, I sound just like that. And everybody hates that because everybody sat through that monotone, that drone, but it's so ingrained into my brain, I don't know how to read it any other way.
I made a point to put as much energy and enthusiasm mm-hmm. into what I was saying as I was going through it. And that grabbed their attention. I was like, good. I can't believe that it actually sounds interesting.
Yes. Sometimes you really got to think outside the box to maintain a listener's attention. Something we talk about in our online groups is for a lot of the newer narrators, it isn't enough to just read the words. You have to sell the story. You have to tell the story.
You have to perform it.
And what you think you sound like in your head is oftentimes very different from what's actually coming out of your mouth to get these two to match for the listener.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. As you're going into more and more of this journey, you're picking up some other genres along the way. What were some other standout ones that you were able to do that you felt like that you really kicked some serious ass on that one?
Like I said, I don't remember what the first one was, but when I was able to pull off an entire book in a British accent, I thought that's a little feather in my cap. I can do this now. And not only that, but like any book, you have to now do that accent for different voices. If you can do one British accent, straight BBC English, okay, that's fine. But you have to be able to pepper it with other dialects or other voices, higher, lower, rougher, smoother. So that was something that's fun. I always get a little nervous when I audition for an accent in a British or a book in a British accent because I feel I don't know if the narrators or the author is British or they just want it in a British accent, but they're going to listen to it. And are they going to notice in a split second? Oh, no, he's not. He's an American. Or do they go, hey, no, actually, that's not too bad for an American. You know,
right.
What I mean?
Yeah. Again, getting that sort of compliment is a big help.
And actually, I did get a compliment similar to that in the last couple of months that was, you're very good, but. And I'm like, okay, I'll take it. I will take your very good, but yeah, I'm not a Brit, so I will accept that I'm not 100% on it.
Yeah.
So.
And what was it like when you finally hit, since you're approaching 60 books now. So when did you do anything special when you hit number 50?
No, I didn't do anything special other than just mentally. It's like, yes, that's a mark. That's a benchmark. And to my detriment, I compare myself often to a lot of other narrators around my experience level. And it's how many books have they done? And how many books am I comparing? You know what I mean? Am I keeping up with the Joneses in that regard? But 50 books is the milestone. Absolutely. And the vast majority of my books have been full length or close to full length books. I have very few books under 4 hours, under 5 hours. Most of my books are full length novels and stuff. A lot more books with the same amount of time as I do or less or whatever. Are they short? Are they longer? It is completely a fault of mine that I do that. And I need to stop doing that. And just what I've done is what I've done. And 50 was good. And approaching 60, it comes and goes in spurts, little dry period. And then all of a sudden, boom. And then a little dry period. Then all of a sudden a bunch and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Feast or famine, very much feast or famine in this industry.
It definitely is. And it feels like if you're out of sight, you're out of mind. So how are you able to, despite not having as strong a presence on social media, but still maintaining a very good looking website with a lot of different samples, has that been working as your calling card to keep the works coming in?
My website hasn't been the trigger that got pulled that got me hired. A couple of my authors have found me via Googling male audiobook narrators. I know one of my regular authors found me because I did a short YouTube tribute when Anne Rice passed. I enjoy horror movies and The Vampire Chronicles. Loved them. When she passed, I just did a little video. And one of my recurring authors said she found that video and said, you're the voice for this character of my books. My very small social media presence did work in that instance. Who knows what it would do if I was on there more often? As you and I were speaking before the podcast started, was that I'm very bad at social media. And part of me, because I guess my generation, that get off my lawn generation, afraid of getting trapped by the algorithm of if I start having an online presence, I need to then therefore maintain the online presence. And I'm not good at it.
As someone who finds himself trapped in that algorithm many more times than he cares to admit, I definitely know what you're talking about. So if someone wanted to go in this direction, wanted to take the plunge into audiobook narrating, you've gotten a lot of experience yourself in this amount of time that you've been involved. What would you say is a topic that they can focus on if they were to get started in it?
A lot of the people that I speak to, a lot of people that are in my group and stuff like that, they want to do it and they get a computer and they get a microphone, but I would say you're going to need a space to record in. That's probably got to be number one, because it doesn't matter how good your voice is. It doesn't matter how expensive your microphone is. If you can't record in a space that lends itself to narration, that's going to be your first roadblock. And I'm not talking about going out and buying a whisper room. You can make an inexpensive recording space out of a closet with a bunch of clothes in it, but you're going to have to get that dialed in. And then you need some decent equipment, because again, doesn't matter how good your voice is, if you don't have the right equipment to capture it and process it the right way, or at least an editor to do that for you. And then the lion's share of the experience over the job comes in. Okay, now we got to get this ready. Do you have the voice for it? And again, it's not just about reading the words on the page. It's about selling that story and emoting that story. And we talk a lot about, there's a big difference between when a person's eyes read the words on a page and their brain process it versus their ears listening to it. You read at a different pace when you're listening to it versus when you're reading it with your eyes and stuff like that. So those are all little things that need to get tweaked, but those all come with experience. In a nutshell, probably the best answer to your question is jump in and jump into the deep end. What you need to work on will float to the surface quickly, and then you can tackle that. Once you've tackled that, the next thing you need to work on will float, and now we're going to tackle this. But don't be hesitant. Just go for it. Try it. Join some online groups. There are so many online peer groups out there that are willing to provide you with their experience, and see where you're at. Don't be shy.
Excellent. Yeah, absolutely. Even though you said before that you don't have as much of a social media imprint, where can listeners find you if they so inclined?
So you can see at my website, ericpriestman.com. I do have an Instagram account. My name is Eric, D-E-N-A-R-R-A-T-O-R, Eric DeNarrator, on Instagram and on Threads. Those are the two best places you can find me. Reach out to me. If you go onto Audible and type in my name, Eric Priestman, you'll pull up the whole list of my resume so far. Those are the best places to get me. New Year's resolution.
I have quite a few resolutions of my own. And one of those is to do the same thing in terms of getting myself more prepared to promote myself.
You know what? Let's interject something real quick before I forget it. I've had some industry professionals, producers and casting agents specifically, have said this in seminars I've gone to. We voiceover artists, narrators, don't need a social media presence that completely highlights VO and narration. If you just have a positive social media presence out there, it could be stories with your dog or anything. If you just have a social media presence, that's supremely beneficial. It doesn't have to be about your latest book or video from inside your studio or something like that. So that's something I've retained, obviously not put into practice. It can just be, hi world, this is me.
Yeah.
This is me. I like puppy dogs and walks on the beach and sunsets, that kind of thing.
Yep, absolutely. And yeah, just what Eric was saying, when it comes to this or any other creative outlet that you are focusing on, take the plunge, go for it. Life is too short. You got to pursue these outlets. We all need them. The world needs them. They need to get introduced to different stories that they otherwise would not have been introduced to. They need to get a story out there that just might resonate with the same person and might inspire them to start following their own creative dreams and start writing their stories. Whatever the case, there is so much that is out there. And with today's technology, there is no excuse when it comes to taking the plunge and going to what you want. If you want to get involved in audiobooks, ECX is right there. It's a wonderful resource. It provides everything you need to get you started. We can have literally a movie studio in our pockets. That's how wild things are right now. I hope that all of you are using this time as we're getting up to 2026. I hope that you are deciding to take these creative plunges, to use the technology that is out there, to use the resources that are there. This show is definitely a resource because it provides a lot of good material when it comes to what to do if you want to follow a specific creative outlet. And if you want to even start a podcast of your own, this is the time to do it. Take these opportunities where they are. Do not live in regret for not taking them. Keep moving forward. Take your shot because, as I've said before, in these crazy times, we need your stories, your ideas, and your vision now more than ever. So for Eric Priestman, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to heesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to george@heesgotit.com.